We cover many serious issues in this podcast. This discussion may contain reference to domestic violence, sexual violence, violence against children, suicide, drug use, or graphic depictions of death or dead bodies. It is not suitable for all audiences.
Tonight on Unsolved Mysteries Rewind, two friends get together to discuss episodes of their favorite television show, Unsolved Mysteries. Will they find answers? Will anyone care? You may be able to solve a mystery.
I'm recording right now.
Hello, you are listening to Unsolved Mysteries Rewind. My name is Kim, and I am joined, as always, by my co-host, Mark. Mark, how are you?
I'm doing great, Kim. Thank you so much for taking the time to talk about this exciting, haunted episode. And I mentioned before, in take one, that we are having a hard time getting this to work. And just technology is getting in our eyes, and it's the smoke is in our eyes, but we're going to get through it and get through this episode today. I'm excited.
Yeah, exactly. Me too. We can't do this. So we are talking about season 9, episode 14, which originally aired on March 14th, 1997.
Amazing. So it's 23 years ago. I mean, I watched some of these episodes and I'm still kind of blown away by how, not only how long ago it was, but how, I guess, relevant some of these stories are and how some of these are genuinely still unsolved. We're going to be talking about a number of things, such as spontaneous human combustion, which is just a fascinating topic to me. But and of course, Tupac Shakur, which we can't jump into the big stories yet because there are a few to we have to work up to it, I think.
Yeah, exactly. I like to call this one the surprise sex offender episode.
Yeah, I mean, well, it's a surprise because of the update that you will find pretty much only on Unsolved Mysteries Rewind.
I think so, too. So the first story is a Noble Brothers Run. So it's February 1996. It's like early in the morning, and Becky Wood is home alone with her four grandkids when two masked men break into her house. And it's not masked like you're thinking. It's like a scary, bloody Halloween mask.
Yeah, it's very strange. It's one of these things, and they're super brutal about it. Sometimes when we see these reenactments, it's kind of soft, but these guys were pretty rough, I thought.
Yeah, no, it was scary.
Yes. The masks weren't so scary because they were Halloween masks, but they're yelling and screaming like, "Where's the money, bro?" You know, they are breaking in and they know precisely what they want, but they don't seem to know exactly where it is.
Exactly. And they're like assaulting her, you know, "What's the combo to the safe? What's the combo?" And she's like, "I don't have it." So one of the intruders binds her with duct tape in the kitchen, and the other one she can hear ransacking her jewelry upstairs. So then all of a sudden, one of her grandkids who happens to be sleeping over, Matthew, stumbles out of the bedroom, and they just like hop on him, put a trash bag over his head.
Oh my God. It is so, it's crazy. I feel so bad for Matthew at first. And we putting the bag over his head and grandma's, you know, kind of defenseless because she's tied up. This seems like it's going to a very, very dark place very quickly.
Exactly. I mean, there's only one reason that you would put like a plastic bag over somebody's head, and that's to kill them. So it's
over
horrifying,
a kid's head, you know, it's.
Yeah.
Now, I don't know about you, but whenever I hear somebody is bound with duct tape, it really freaks me out. Because duct tape is really sticky, and it's really have you ever gotten duct tape on you and it's like you go to pull it off, you're like, you know, it hurts, you know, it's serious.
Yeah, I've been duct taped before.
What?
But well, only because like I'm so afraid of getting raped and murdered that I would always have Jack like duct tape me or whatever and try and get out of it.
This is getting a little too personal.
No, it's nothing sexual or anything, but I was like, I need to know how to fight my way out. So he actually would like put duct tape over my mouth, and he said that if you lick it, it like loses its stickiness, and that's totally true.
All right. So this is a good tip to know. I always, and this is going to sound a little gross, is things are getting weird in this episode, people. So I always wondered, like, if my mouth is taped and I were to just kind of keep pushing saliva through, you know, separating between my lips and the area, wouldn't I? Yeah. I mean, I was thinking that it would break down eventually. And I'd be able to bite it or something. So that does work.
It's really, it's not even that much saliva. Like if you just licked around your lips, it just starts coming right off. It's crazy. So good tip out there.
So if you're going to use duct tape, what you need to do is not just put one piece. You need to wrap it around the whole head, I think.
We do not endorse any of this kind of behavior. We cannot be responsible for this. But
in a movie, that would be the right way to do it. But I think they make special duct tape for... people who play role, you know, they role play and stuff like that, where it's less sticky. So if you do want to kind of play with this kind of stuff, we encourage you to at least use a safer product, not just
plain old duct tape. And I cannot stress enough that my husband duct taping me was not sexual.
I know.
just teasing. But anyway, Becky hears the men start to like drag the safe out of the house and start her car and they leave. So one of the other kids wakes up and cuts her and Matthew free. So she goes to call the police, but the phone lines and the alarms were cut. Eventually, the police are called, and it turns out that the intruders took off with $20,000 worth of jewelry per car and a safe full of $18,000 of cash.
See, when I heard that the alarms were cut, I was thinking, this has to be a real pro, because when you cut an alarm, doesn't it go off? You know, it just doesn't. There's like a failsafe, you know, it's like when it doesn't have, usually you have a bell and that bell is battery powered. And if you cut the alarm, that alarm would go off. That's the way it was in our house when I was a kid. And that was like an alarm system from like probably the like 70s or something. So anyway, I'm just throwing it out there.
Yeah, totally. Well, and I know you've mentioned too that that is so much cash and jewelry to have on hand. Like that's crazy.
Yeah, I mean, I guess it's a good spot to keep your cash. But I just don't recommend people putting $18,000 in cash, which is probably worth, what, $40,000 now, in a safe that can be dragged out of the house.
Yeah, that's very true. We do find that later that day, the police found her car, and the next week, they actually find the safe, which is just empty.
She had a Lincoln, by the way, not a cheap car.
Well, I mean, $20,000 worth of jewelry. They were obviously doing something.
Yeah, they were doing something right.
The detective says that the intruders like knew too much to be strangers. They knew where the alarm was and all that. So about 100 miles away, the jewelry starts showing up in all these pawn shops. And somehow police are able to conclude that it must have been a man by the name of Larry Juster. Mm-hmm. So we find out that his real name is Gary Noble and his brother, Ted Noble, him and Ted worked for Woody, the husband, a few months before.
Well, I have a question. I'm sorry to interrupt you. So pawn shops. Pawn shops to me are a fascinating part of American culture. I'm not sure if it's really big in other countries, but pawn shops... I don't know if you've ever gone into them or anything like that.
Oh, yeah.
Okay. I mean, so it's like going to a garage sale, except everything is like a lot better, you know, and more expensive. So
yeah,
the thing that I find so strange is, from what I understand anyway, if you're selling something to a pawn shop, you have to show proper ID. You have to have, you know, especially if it's jewelry and stuff like that. Now, it could be something where it's kind of like, look, I just need the money. Give me whatever you want. I'll just take it, and the pawn shop just, you know, being, they do tend to be a little bit shady. Maybe they just kind of cut a too good to be true deal.
Or, I mean, I'm guessing that's how they figured out that it was Larry Juster. He probably had a fake ID.
Yeah, but I'm saying, like, it would have to be a good fake ID, because pawn shop guys are probably, you know, pretty good at detecting fake, you know, counterfeit stuff. So
I would imagine so. I'm sure they see it a lot.
But I'm just saying, you know, I think that it's always strange to me whenever this kind of pops up. And this is the mid-90s. So it's, you know, there are computers in the world. And
yeah, very true. Very true. Well, the brothers actually find out that the cops are after them. I don't know how, but they decided to flee Ohio. And then that's where we kind of leave before the update. So we do get an update. 1 month after the broadcast, they were arrested in Nashville after a high-speed chase, and they pled guilty to charges of theft, burglary, robbery, and tampering with evidence. So they each received between...
There's more. There's so much more to this story. See, at first, we think like, all right, cool. All right, they caught it. This is pretty amazing. Unsolved Mysteries solved the mystery, sort of, right in front of us.
No, definitely. I mean, it's great to know that they're free, but there is so much more to this story. So they each received 3 to 15 years, and they have since been released. So it turns out that Ted, aka Theodore, is still kind of something of a scumbag. He had a bunch of legal incidences, like recently, domestic violence, you know, pretty much everything.
Yes.
Now, in 2011, Gary was arrested and charged in the shooting death of a man named Mark Dylan Schaefer. Mark was actually killed in his home during a robbery, and Gary pled guilty to manslaughter and was sentenced to 23 years in prison. So he's actually currently in a correctional institute in Mansfield, Ohio, and he is scheduled for release in August of 2034.
Think of it this way. That's not 14 out. More years.
I know it's crazy, but you know, I don't know if he's got that in him. I'm looking at his current mugshot and he looks pretty sickly, but there is more to this story. Little Matthew, that had a bag tied over his head, is a registered sex offender. He was 22 or 23 years old when he was charged with sexual assault on a 14-year-old girl in 2008.
This blew me away a little bit because not only I mean, when they show the kid, the first thing you have to do is a little bit of a guffaw because he has this mushroom haircut. And you're thinking, 1996, I guess. I don't know. It's, I don't think I've ever seen that haircut in real life. But it's the kind of thing that if you go to the barber, there's usually a picture of a little kid wearing, who has all these bad hairstyles. And that kid is up there. He looks just like that kid. And he got older and his hair didn't get so much better. He's definitely there's a demon within Matthew, and unfortunately, he acted upon it, and he's a sexual deviant. It's terrible.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. So that was a surprise twist ending to that story, but there are more twists and turns ahead.
All right. So this time, I just love the comparison photo that you have of them. We were not too sure if it was the same person, but I don't think you can miss that little piggy nose.
No, it's like a little crooked. Like, I'm pretty sure it's him. It's the same birth year, same first and last name, same face, like cheeks, crooked nose, everything. Like, it's so him.
Yeah.
But I guess we should say allegedly just to cover our butts.
Yeah. He did it. But so, all right. So here we are, around the same period of time, we're in... another area, well, not another area of Florida, but an area of Florida I've never heard of called Amacali. Yeah. And this guy's riding his motorcycle. Is he leaving the hospital because his wife just had the baby? Like, what is going on? And all right, is that the case in the very beginning?
Yeah, so like his wife just had a baby. He came from work. I'm guessing she took an ambulance to get there. And then he's like, oh, I can't bring this newborn baby home on my motorcycle that I took to work. So he left on his motorcycle. He was going to go pick the family car up and meet them back at the hospital.
Doesn't it seem like a movie or something? Like, you just had your child and you're like, I'm riding home on a motorcycle thinking about life. You know, I don't know. There's something poetic about that. But unfortunately, there's a puddle and he... basically loses control of his car, and the reenactment has like this weird slow motion type of thing. Can't blame them too much. But apparently he falls into this body of water. And
it was a drainage canal.
It's weird. It's we don't have that kind of stuff around here, so I don't really know how many of those kind of exist around. But so it's a body of water. He falls into it and he's face down. And I don't know how long he was face down for, but it couldn't have been for too long. Somebody comes by, they notice that, you know, this accident had happened. This woman goes down into the ravine, I guess, or the lake, and flips him over basically all he needed, he was unconscious and he was basically drowning. Mm-hmm. And she just flipped him over and saved his life, which I just think, you know, it was such a simple thing to do, but really, I mean, she completely affected this terrible situation. I mean, it affected him for the rest of his life. I mean, if that happens to you, you know, you have to feel like a very blessed person.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it looked like a backcountry road. The odds that anybody would even be passing seem astronomical, let alone somebody that could see that there was an issue and flip him over while he's still alive. Mm-hmm. Like, the fates were really aligned on this day. And she actually, like, wraps him up, picks, like, has him go to her car, which I don't think you're supposed to do with an accident victim. But she, like, had him go to the car. They wait together until the cops come. And then she actually leaves. He gets taken in the ambulance to the same hospital where his infant daughter was just born. And then she leaves without ever anybody ever knowing her name. So we get Keely Shea Smith on, and she comes just to talk to us about how we realize who it was. And it turns out that it is a woman named Tammy Dotson who was his savior that day.
Yeah, was she a nurse? Did I read that somewhere?
I don't think so.
Okay, for some reason I thought she had some type of medical background. It doesn't really matter. I mean, really all she did was flip him over. But nonetheless, she saved his life completely. There seems to be a little bit of a weirdness. I think, you know, when Steve finally, well, Steve seems almost obsessed with meeting her, right? Yes, which is understandable, absolutely. But there's something a little more to it, I think. And I think that maybe Sharon.
Sharon.
Okay. Sharon.
Yeah. That's just spelled weird.
I think that she was kind of viewing the situation from a distance, I guess.
Yeah. If you asked me when I stopped this episode where I saw the update going, I thought that he was going to be divorced from Sharon and married to Tammy. Like, I 100% thought that he was, like, into her.
Like, they would pull the camera back and it would be him sitting next to her.
Yeah, exactly. And then Sharon, like, poor pregnant Sharon, just like, oh. But yeah, she, like, they'll show them going to the scene of the crime and they're hugging, and she, like, never takes her hand off, like, his hips, and they're hugging, and then you see poor, like, 8-month pregnant Sharon, like, waddling along in the background, like, hanging out. So I don't know, but yeah, so she's pregnant with another kid. He's like, I just want you to meet my baby, because, like, because of you, she has a father in her
and
life.
It's
so
sweet.
It's a nice,
yeah, we're like, oh, this is awesome. What a good guy, right, Kim? Steve is a good guy,
but then
update.
Yeah, a little digging found that in 1999, Steve was charged with 4 counts of lewd and lascivious acts with a child between the ages of 12 and 16 when he was 30.
Oh, my God.
What a scumbag. So he's actually a registered sex offender. He lives in Vermont, and now he's got a bunch of little kids running around. He's, like, married to somebody else, and he's got a few new kids. Yeah, I found everybody on Facebook, and I gotta say, I think Sharon comes off smelling like a rose. She's like a bodybuilder now. She has like a super hot husband she's married to, and I'm like, good on you, Sharon.
But that's another thing, you know, so he, obviously that marriage ended terribly. There's a child involved and everything, but he's remarried now, and, you know, it's, how many kids total? I mean, it just, it's scary
to
me.
I know. Well, from what I know from, like, Facebook and all that stuff, he has the 2 girls from the first marriage. He has 2 boys now.
Oh, I know what
I don't know.
Sharon is actually a retired corrections officer. I'm sorry. That was the...
I think you mean Tammy is a retired sheriff's officer. Tammy, the one who saved him, not Sharon.
That's what I meant. I'm confusing the two.
No, it's okay. This is a cursed production, lest we forget.
Yes. But
go on. Well, I was just going to say the other kind of fluff story that we have before we get to the real meat of this is another little kind of throwaway story. Almost. They spent like 6 minutes on it. But this girl, Virginia Burns, she's like pouring through baby photos of her with her father, Joe. And it turns out that the baby in the photos is not her. She thought it was her whole life. So her mom said, oh, that's just a friend's baby. Don't worry about it. in 1991.
Wait, you know, all right. So you have a baby picture in front of you, right? And you're like, at some point, somebody had to say, oh, that's a picture of you. Had to.
Absolutely.
But it's like, what are they just like having drinks one night? And they're like, you know what? That's not you.
I don't know. It's so cruel. But it seems... It's horrendous. And like you said, I'm sure she felt her whole life that was her. It wasn't until she was in her 30s that anybody even told her that it wasn't her. And apparently this was like after her father died. That's when the mom was like, oh, hey, you know how I told you that that was you and it wasn't you? And then you know how I told you that that was a friend's baby and then it wasn't a friend's baby? Well, it turns out that your dad was actually married before and the baby in the pigs is your sister.
Oh, and then so, dead. You know, it's... Don't ask any questions. There's no time for it. You know, it's so sad, the whole thing. It makes me immediately think of one particular baby photo of myself, and I'm like, maybe it's not me. You know, you start questioning.
Oh my God.
I think it is, though. But it's just, I put myself in that situation, though, and I couldn't imagine being in that situation.
Yeah, it's horrible. And then like 3 months later, her mom dies. So she's like, where do I even go from here? So she turns over the picture and it says Susan and I and Hugo. And apparently Hugo is a small town not very far from where they are in Colorado. So in 1942, we find out that Virginia's father worked at as a busboy in a diner, and he kind of fell for the owner's daughter. And the owner's like, he is no good for you. Like, he's not going to go anywhere with his life. But they got married and they had little baby Susan. And in 1946, they divorced and he left to go to Greeley, Colorado. And he eloped with Virginia's mother, Dolly. And then they obviously had Virginia. So when Virginia's six, she gets this doll for her birthday and she's like obsessed with this doll. It's all she ever wanted. So she's like, what should I name the baby, Daddy? And the dad's like, why don't you name her Sweet Sue? And she's like, okay. So she just calls the baby Sweet Sue. And the mom's like, go play with your doll, honey. So she goes and takes the doll and she's like, Sweet Sue, really? Because now we know that her sister's name is Susan and he was like thinking about his first child.
It is twisted. I didn't like the story. I just thought it's one of these type of things where people make decisions that work best for them, but they don't really take into consideration how it's going to affect these children as adults.
And I definitely feel like that's the 1940s of it. Like, we did not care as much about children's feelings, you know, as we do today in 1940. So they're like, you know, she never knew Susan. She's never going to miss her. But yeah, it's just, it's a messed up story, honestly. But, you know, there is some good news. A, there's no sex offenders in the story that I know of.
Oh,
but B,
the first
on the night
of the bunch,
broadcast,
right?
I know, seriously, but on the night of the broadcast, Bethina Susan King from Oklahoma City called in and said she was Susan, and Susan and Virginia talked on the phone, made plans to meet, and that's where we leave Unsolved Mysteries. But I did find a picture of them reunited.
I thought it was sadly, so sweet, this photo. I don't know why I thought it was so nice. I know, I love getting some type of closure with some of these stories. And once in a blue moon, we won't have any physical, there won't be a photo, there won't be something. But I always like to see that they're physically together. And I don't know. I felt good about this story. Hopefully they remain friends.
Well, I believe that they did remain friends. Apparently, she had been searching for her birth father like her whole life. And it is nice to know that they have each other now that, you know, the parents are deceased. There is one family member left. But sadly, Virginia, our main girl with the doll, she actually died in 2019.
Hmm. Now, one thing, Susan's first name is very, very unique. I never heard of this name. It's Perthina.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not going to give her a whole name, but Perthina. It's just such a unique name. I don't know what kind of name that is.
I don't either, but it was then changed to Bethina, which is also kind of interesting.
Yeah, Perthina, Bethena, Bethina. It's all very interesting.
Yeah, but...
all in all, I'm glad that they also had closure. Having this kind of gaping hole in your life cannot be easy. So
yeah, I can't imagine.
But speaking of gaping holes in the floors, and hey, you know, my transition there was better than the title of this next segment from Unsolved Mysteries.
Oh, my
which
God.
Is,
no, I was actually impressed. But yeah, this segment is tastelessly called Up in Smoke.
I thought it was going to be like Cheech and Chong or something. So we have a couple different stories of something that I personally think is a very interesting topic, which is the topic of spontaneous human combustion.
Exactly. Now, before I started Oh, please.
No, you can't. Please.
I was going to say, no, before I started researching this, I thought that it was a fact. I didn't realize that it was like, is it real? Is it not real? Like, I thought it was something that happened. So I am just learning this at 31 years old that this is not a real thing.
Yeah, I think the jury is out on this as to what it is precisely. Because I think that there are different things that are happening. But I also think a lot of it, probably 90% of it, can be explained away as having a real solution. But some of these things
that's
just seem
absolutely
so strange.
Totally. And that's 100% the way I feel, too. I am keeping the possibility open because I think it's exciting that there are certain things that we just don't know about. But I do think that a lot of these could be pretty easily explained away.
So the opening is it's always fun to see these people. They're just kind of hanging out in the kitchen and, you know, something bad is about to happen. And this smoke starts pouring out of a woman named Kay's sweater. And she's like,
yeah, like her shoulder blade.
It's like, what the hell? Yeah, what is that? And did she say that she felt that I was on fire?
Yeah, she's like, Mike. And she starts like stripping off her clothes because she thinks that her sweater's on fire. So she takes off her sweater and they can't find any source of it. So she's like, oh, my God, I'm still smoking. So she takes off her shirt and she's just standing there in her bra. And Mike, her husband, says that the smoke was coming from her skin and that there was no burn marks in the clothes.
Why does Mike know what burnt flesh smells like?
Well, Mike actually used to work in a crematorium, oddly.
Yeah, it's like a 7-Eleven job when you're 16. Mike, you even made a note here. What are the odds of that one? But, I mean, that's a pretty eye-opening type of, eye-opening. I guess it's a nose-opening type of smell. So we have, you point out that if you have a keen eye and you're willing to watch it very closely, you can see a type of steam machine, implanted.
Yeah, at 22 minutes and 30 seconds, you can see when she's taking off her sweater that there's like all these tubes and wires going up to her sweater. That's like the machine to pump the steam out. But a second later, it's all gone because it's shot from a different angle and she's just like just in her bra.
So spontaneous human combustion, I think, and please correct me if you disagree with this, is essentially when a body will just spontaneously, for lack of a better word, go up in flames and disintegrate. You know, it basically, you become a funeral pyre and leaving almost nothing. And very often the surrounding materials and like if you're sitting in a chair, very often the arms of the chair may appear to be untouched, but you just burned right through it as though like a laser just popped you out of existence.
It's so bizarre because there are so many things next to the, you know, piles of ash that are left that look like those should have gone up. I don't understand how, like you said, arms of furniture will not go up. But I will say in all of the cases that I looked into that weren't on the Unsolved Mysteries, including one that was on the Unsolved Mysteries, like almost always the feet are left behind of the person.
It's like often the feet and in one case, the head.
Ooh, yeah, part of the head.
And it really does make me think about, if somebody is, if they're obese and they have, they don't move very much and maybe they have a very poor diet or they abuse some forms of substances that may be flammable. I would imagine that eventually you could become something that would ignite. You know, if you eat too many carrots, your skin turns orange from the beta carotene. You know, it's the body can only hold so much before it starts kind of seeping out of its pores. And I'm just
interesting.
It doesn't, I guess, make it. It's not completely not believable that if somebody is just boozing it up and eating really terrible foods that they're secreting all of these things that could ignite, or maybe they're on medication that could, accelerate that.
Yeah, and I totally agree with you. And basically, we have two guys come on. One guy is in the camp of spontaneous combustion is 100% real. His name is Larry Arnold. He actually wrote a book called Ablaze. And then there is somebody else who is like the owner of like Skeptics Magazine. And it is so funny because his name is Joe Nickel. And from what I can understand, one of the main reasons of this guy's existence is to dispute everything that the author Arnold says, because there are numerous television shows, articles, everything of these two guys going back and forth and back and forth. And his whole thing is to disprove spontaneous human combustion.
Right. He's so like he's kind of a wet blanket. Snopes, but...
Exactly. Yeah. And he is like, he has got this guy, Larry Arnold's case. Like he has got his number, but the scene that is the reason I picked this episode. And I think this has stuck with a lot of people who saw Unsolved Mysteries as a kid, is Kendall Mott. We are in Crown Point, New York. Kendall Mott hadn't heard from his dad, George, in a while. And George is a retired fireman, and he's kind of a sickly guy. So Kendall goes to check on him. And he said when he got there, the windows were all brown, and the door handle was, like, hot to the touch when he touched it.
Yeah.
So he goes through the house. He smells smoke. He makes it to his dad's bedroom. And what he sees is a smoldering bed with a leg, a rib cage, and a shrunken head on it.
Yeah, I mean, and it, I just think the whole thing is so crazy. Now, did they say it's a shrunken skull?
I wasn't sure if it was skull. I think it's a skull. I think it is a shrunken skull. But they said to a beyond, like, lifelike manner. Like, it was so tiny. They didn't say it on Unsolved Mysteries, but that is on an article that I read.
I wonder what that means exactly. I mean, it's, I don't know what that means. You know, a shrunken skull. You know, I mean, I know what a shrunken skull is, but usually that's because they remove the skull and the, you know, you've seen these like shrunken heads, right?
Yeah. No, exactly. It's so bizarre. And it doesn't seem like something that would happen from a fire happening. Like I'm so puzzled by this, but, Larry Arnold, the author guy, he comes on and says that at a crematorium, people said that the results of his body, of what was left over of George's body, was similar to being in a crematorium for over 12 hours at 3,000 degrees.
Now, I don't know if you're going, I should have done the research on this. How long, do you know how long it takes to cremate a body?
No, that's a great question. We should know this.
Yeah, that is, I feel really dumb for not knowing that, which is why I'm going to do a quick search for it. But I'm just kind of curious because I cannot imagine it takes 12 hours at 3,000 degrees to bring a body to ash. I was saying yeah, when I smoke foods, you know, it it's like slow and low. And that's another topic that came up is some of these things you're saying, well, people were experts are saying that it's possible that the bodies could be, I don't want to use the word cooked, can be destroy or, you know, burned at a sustained temperature of around 500 degrees. And you referred to it very eye-openingly as low and slow, which just sounds delicious.
It does like bring a brisket to mind. But yeah, it's just crazy. So yeah, that's according to scientist Dougal Drysdale, is that this could have happened over a period of time. But what's really weird is that the heat melted a television, but left most of the bedding unburned. And there was also these big ash or matches like right by his bed. And those were completely unburned. And he actually was on an oxygen machine and it was still pumping air. So Joe Nickel of Skeptical Inquirer magazine says that George was a former smoker and maybe, you know, for old time's sakes, he decided to light up a cigarette. And that is why we have a classic smoking in bed death is what he says. And it's interesting because smoking does account for 1 in 4 fire deaths, according to the National Fire Prevention Agency, which accounts for 590 people per year die in fires caused by smoke.
Oh, my God. I remember when I was a kid, there was a famous TV movie called The Burning Bed.
Mm-hmm.
Where I believe it was about that. But I do have an answer here. Cremations can take about 3 hours. And processing the cremated remains takes another 1 to 2 hours. So let's say about 5 hours to cremate an adult.
Less time than I would have thought.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not really sure what the process is. I don't want to learn.
Yeah,
that's something. It's just one of those things that I'm just not going to go down that rabbit hole sometimes.
But here's something I will tell you that I think is important as far as cremation and ash is that from my understanding, you are left as a pile of bones and they break up the bones. Yes. And that's the quote unquote ash that you get. So it's not completely gone, you know, whereas this guy was almost completely ash.
Did you have you ever seen the remains of a person?
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. So you see, it's almost like a rubble. In a way, it's, mm-hmm. I mean, nothing's yeah, exactly. identifiable, thank goodness. It's not like you're getting like, oh, that could be a part of a femur. But mm-hmm. Everything gets, I guess, I'm not sure how they do it, but I'm going to imagine they have a tamponing device that basically breaks mm-hmm. it up into tiny little pieces. And the yeah. first time I saw that was for my my roommate's dog who was cremated. And I don't know, just something about it just made me just really bummed out. I don't know.
I know. When I was a kid, like that really bothered me. Just the idea of cremation. Cause I remember, I think my parents were like going to go scatter my granddad's ashes. Mm-hmm. And I was just picturing like grabbing like what used to be an eyeball. Like that is so crazy. Oh, and yeah. I remember that like really messed me up as a kid. As an adult, I think I probably will be cremated, but I really don't like to think about it.
I didn't know if that was too personal. As a Jewish man, it's against my religion to be cremated, but I oh. really want to be. So this is a big discussion that my wife and I have had because yeah. I don't personally enjoy the idea of being buried. What if I'm still alive? No, mm-hmm. but you get the little bell. Ding, 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 ding. Dig me back up. So I'm. She knows that I want to be cremated. So I'm putting it out there on a podcast. So,
okay. I know Jack said he just wants to be tossed out in the compost pile, but I think my neighbors would look at me weird.
You know, they have that. Have you ever looked into the, they?
Yeah, actually, I think that is kind of probably what we'll lean to, but I don't know. These are decisions we should make sooner rather than later and get down on paper because after you're dead, I'll get such a fight.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know. Maybe just put a seed down in my mouth and then bury me. I don't know.
Yeah, that's what he wants. He wants to be like naked with a seed in his hands. So I was like, all right, sure, sure.
I want to wear a tuxedo. So it's, yeah. So nonetheless, I just, there's something to me anyway that with cremation, there's a genuine completion of existence.
Yeah.
While the,
interesting.
The letting the earth feed on me is just not a comfortable thing for me personally.
Yeah, for sure. No, I totally understand. But, you know, speaking of end of existence, we time travel a little bit back to 1966. It's December 4th, and friends visit 92-year-old Dr. Irving Bentley at about 9 p.m., and he's alive, well, everything's good. Mm-hmm. On December 5th, the next day, meter man Don Gosnell, who works for the gas company in Pennsylvania, he's like, I didn't hear from Dr. Bentley, so I just let myself in. And apparently this was okay with Dr. Bentley because he was like infirmed. He used a walker and basically he had told the meter comp or the gas company, like, if you don't hear from me, come on in. It's okay. So the meter man goes down and he sees a 14-inch neat little pile of ashes on the floor. And so he looks up and he sees that there's a huge hole in the ceiling above him and there's still embers around the ceiling. So he's like, that's weird. I'm going to go check that out. So he runs up to where the hole was and it turns out it was in the bathroom. And in the bathroom, ooh, he sees a burnt, like a charred walker.
It's like half melted. And it's crazy.
Yeah, exactly. And part of a leg near the hole. And he said it was so discolored, he didn't even know what it was. And we do learn that his head was actually left at the scene, too. So he like probably runs like hell, I would imagine. And I kept seeing something in the toilet on Unsolved Mysteries. And I'm like, is this his head? Because I'm going to be so upset if I know that this poor man's head landed in the toilet. But apparently... yeah, exactly. Isn't that just like the worst way to go? But apparently it was a broken water pitcher. Now, Larry Arnold, our like team spontaneous human combustion guy, he thinks that the doctor like got up to pee and then just combusted. And they show such an upsetting reenactment in like the reflection of the hallway mirror that you just see this old man just suddenly catch on fire. It was crazy.
Yeah, that whole story is kind of crazy. You know, one thing just occurred to me, though. The gas company. So he lives in Coldersport, Pennsylvania. Now, in Pennsylvania, I'm not sure if they had natural gas there at this time. They, if you go in that area, it's kind of there's a lot of Amish, and they use propane instead of natural gas. And I wonder, I just have to be curious if it was propane that was in being pumped through his house, because if that's the case, it, you know, that ignites relatively easily as well. I don't know. I'm just kind of throwing it out there.
I never thought about that.
You know, if you go there, you'll see on the side of many houses these really large propane tanks. And apparently Amish can use propane to power refrigerators, believe it or not. So
I did know that, but I would just imagine that if it was propane, like boom, like there would be a huge explosion, not just like a centralized hole.
But the thing is it kind of, I mean, if we look at it, it kind of looks like it was an explosion, but an isolated one. But, you know, it might have then spread to the tank itself.
Yeah. I don't know.
I don't
know. It's interesting. I mean, the fun part is that we don't know.
Yes.
You know, like that's what Unsolved Mysteries is
called. Unsolved
Mysteries
for a reason. Yeah.
Yeah. But we, our Joe Nickel wet blanket guy says that Dr. Bentley had a history of setting his clothes on fire. Apparently, all of his like clothes were pop marked with burns from his pipe. So he has a theory that he basically was smoking his pipe, fell asleep, woke up with his clothes on fire. That's why he grabbed the water pitcher to put himself out, and then it fell in the toilet kind of thing.
Do you think Joe Nickel stands alone at parties?
I don't know, because all the articles I read were with him and somebody else, so there's at least one friend that he has.
Going, yeah, know, Joe, but- yeah.
I will say he has the sickest burn I've ever heard in my life, where he says, and I quote, "This is crack pottery of a very high order. There is not a single reasonable theory for spontaneous human combustion. There is no convincing scientific evidence of it. So the mystery mongers ought to just shut up and get a life."
Yeah. Don't question things. But
I don't know. But, you know, on the other side of the coin, Larry Arnold theorizes that some of the cases of spontaneous human combustion may be because of like the electrical current that flows in our bodies naturally.
Mm-hmm. Well, we talked about this in the past about electric magnetic fields, EMF. And yeah, I mean, I don't see how. I mean, we're not supposed to be on our phones when we're pumping gas, you know, because of your own body's discharge reacting with the phone and the gasoline. I don't know. I mean, we do have electricity in our bodies on some level. Is it enough to really ignite something like this? Yes. I don't know. But
I mean, I don't know. It's like you said, if you're drinking so much, say, and it's coming out of your pores and there is like a shock or something from your bodies, is that, does that count? I don't know.
I mean, people can light, this is a little bit childish to say this, but, you know, people do light, you know, farts on fire. You know, we do have, and people damage their internal organs from this. So is it, have you ever heard of this?
I've heard of lighting your farts on fire, not of like internal damage.
It's like, well, actually, Jack and I, no, kidding. no, so that I would stop you on. No, so yeah, like, I mean, you have, you know, people who, because it's methane gas, methane is flammable, and some people have actually ignited their, the methane release, and the fire is kind of backed up like in a spray paint can and done like internal injuries. And what's to say that with perfect circumstances, like the Hurricane Sandy or something like that, the perfect storm, and, you know, you just downed a bottle of tequila or whatever high proof thing, you have a lot of things in you that are flammable. Maybe you're playing with a blowtorch. I don't know. It's just, it just seems, it's not completely impossible, but I'm not saying it's likely.
I totally agree with you. I am definitely leaving the possibility open. But I will say, I just want to end on 1851, scientist Justus von Liebig said,
"Ooh, I like
and
him.
I quote, The opinion that a man can burn of himself is not founded on a knowledge of the circumstances of death, but on the reverse of knowledge, on a complete ignorance of all the causes or conditions which preceded the accident and caused it.
Hmm.
So we had skeptics back in the 1800s.
Now, one of the best things that I learned from this segment is the fact that original linoleum is highly flammable.
Yeah, and apparently that was phased out in the 60s. So it makes sense that if he had it in his home, the doctor had it in his home, it was 1966. But I was watching an episode of Home Improvement the other day.
I love that show.
And they said that linoleum comes from the Latin linum, which means flax, and oleum from the Latin for oil. So it is, I know you did a little more research on it.
Not really, but basically... Oh. Basically, in U.S. Navy warships, they were removed from the deckings because they were very flammable. Actually, I found out one thing, I didn't throw it in here, that in submarines, they remained at the period of time. Mm. They did not remove the flammable linoleum from submarines, which is kind of crazy to me. But yeah, the core ingredients are pine flour, pine resin, pigments, and linseed oil. Very interesting, but you kind of made a connection towards Robert Stack, which I thought was kind of interesting.
Yeah. Well, there's this horrifying effect called the Stack effect, and any chance to do a play on words with Robert Stack's name, I am there. So apparently what happens is that, you know, a fire is going to burn up all of the oxygen in the room. It's going to just use it up. So when like a hole is created or a window's open or something, it can actually just like gobble up all of the oxygen at once and create an explosion, which is known as the Stack effect.
Now, we just reviewed the new Unsolved Mysteries series, season one, or whatever you want to call it. What is your idea? What would be your opinion if they'd come to the table and they said, we're not going to call it Unsolved Mysteries. We're going to call it the Stack effect.
Oh, I'd be down for it, but then you'd have to, like, reanimate his body, and I don't like that.
It's kind of true. But you can do claymation.
That's true.
It'll be like those, the Christmas time, you know, things with the snowman. Frosty.
I got you. Claymation.
Right. Yeah. Is that, I don't know if that's claymation, but anyway.
Yeah.
Let's get on to hip-hop now, because we,
okay.
This is our third time's a charm when it comes to sexual abuse, so.
Yeah, exactly, because we are talking about convicted rapist Tupac Shakur. By the age of 25, he had 4 platinum records and, quote, starred in 5 feature films. And he was actually in an episode of A Different World that I found on YouTube, which makes sense because he's friends with Jada Pinkett Smith. And I know you have some interesting Smith information, but a lot of this info I got from...
You put quotes are uninteresting.
Well, it is. It's all stuff we got to consider.
Yes.
But I got a lot of this from Wikipedia, and we meet a bunch of people that talk about how he was just the greatest guy ever. You know, such a brilliant guy.
Wait, we need to preface. Do you know anything about Tupac Shakur before you started doing the research?
No.
Yeah, me either.
Not at all.
I mean, I've heard of him. Of course, I was not into this form of music. I don't want to say I'm against hip hop, but I was more of a Run DMC late 80s fan of the hip hop genre. And I kind of really didn't follow this entire period of music when it comes to rap.
Like you said, I knew who he was. I was aware of him. I knew he got shot. I was 8
years
old.
Yeah, you were shot.
So I wasn't like aware of it then. But I will say now I'm like a little more into Tupac, which is weird because I don't like supporting rapists.
What?
But I will say his song Hit 'Em Up is like my new summer jam. It is so good. And I love like kind of, I know you've said like thuggier rap where it's like, I'm going to shoot you.
Yeah, yeah.
I'm going to bang your wife, like all that kind of stuff.
Oh, good stuff.
Like that when I'm running because it amps me up. I'm like, yeah, I am the great. I am going to bang your wife. Like it just gets me so excited.
That is too funny.
But we meet DJ Sway, and a DJ Sway is like a MTV VJ, I think. But he was kind of a street tough between 92 and 95. I'm talking about Tupac
street
now. He
tough.
Was arrested 8 times.
Yeah.
Now, one of the times that he was actually arrested is because he was signing autographs at this like playground, and something happened where everybody got out of control. There was kind of a melee. So he pulls a gun. The gun falls. One of his little entourage members picks it up. While he's picking it up, it discharges and shoots a six-year-old boy in the head, killing him. In 1995, he settled with the mom of the little boy for about $500,000. But God, horrifying. So
I just think it's kind of crazy that, all right, it's your gun and it, but it's just, it, I don't know. That is such a weird series of actions, you know?
I know. And then to put a price tag on that little boy's life is so insulting.
Yeah, it really is. I just want to mention, it also says here they were shot so many times. What was he always being shot up for? I've never been shot. So.
Well, you're not a hip-hop rapper either. I mean, look at like 50 Cent and all this. Like, I think that's just part of the game.
I'm MC Mark Kimos. No, it's not.
Oh, I like that.
That's my persona that doesn't exist. So.
Oh. Well, in 1994, he was shot 5 times in the lobby of a New York City recording studio. And there is a picture of him that we will put on the Facebook of him getting wheeled into the ambulance, flipping everybody off, because apparently Biggie Smalls' like entourage came to run and see what happened. And he thought that Biggie was in on it. So he's like flipping off the entourage. We'll get back to that a little more later. But in 1995, he served 8 months in prison for being one of 4 men in a gang rape of a woman at gunpoint. So screw this guy.
And he's already famous at this point, right? I mean,
yes,
I think. I'm not really sure.
Yeah.
What I'm thinking is he's probably at a point of his life where now he is abusing celebrity.
Yeah. You know? Oh, no, I absolutely think so. He is famous at this point because he's already been shot while recording, like, previously. So
you can't be shot until you're famous. Okay.
Well, on September 7th of 1996, he was shot and eventually killed just off of the Las Vegas Strip. And he was in town to attend a prize fight between Mike Tyson and Bruce Seldon.
Yeah, I'll put a link to this fight on as well, just to kind of put them into the situation. Mike Tyson's fights, I've never been much of a boxing fan outside of Rocky, but Mike Tyson was pretty notorious for these fights that would last a minute. I don't know if you ever followed this kind of stuff or went back and looked at kind of what an amazing boxer Mike Tyson was at some point. Maybe he still is. I'm sure he can kick my ass.
Yeah, I looked at the Seldon fight. I watched that in its entirety, and it is like a minute long.
But it looks like Mike Tyson barely touches him, and he kind of goes down. Yeah. But I'm going to say that I would probably also go down pretty easily. But,
yeah.
So it just seems like it doesn't – it looks – and I know that there are people who say that he threw the fight. So I'm not saying he threw the fight. I'm just saying it's a weird – it's an odd fight, that's all. And
and it looked like he barely grazed like the top of his head and he just went down.
Yeah. But Mike Tyson was known to be this type of, you know, crazy, crazy fighter. But Tupac was attending with Suge Knight. I can never pronounce
Suge Knight.
I'm like the I'm like the dad, you know. I'm never going to say your name right. Suge Knight.
Are you kids listening to Suge Knight?
Yeah, exactly. Suge, what is that short for, son? No, and that's where I get shot, and I'm famous. So he's attending with Suge Knight from Death Row Records, which was another big deal in the 90s record-wise. I do have a little fun fact that just January of 2020, the toy and board game company Hasbro purchased Death Row Records. So maybe they're going to have Monopoly. Crazy. I'm not really sure.
I don't know. That is bananas.
Isn't that weird? I don't know how that came in front of me, but I was like, wow, and it's true.
Yeah, no, that was just two worlds I didn't think would collide. But Suge was kind of notorious for finding guys in jail and then saying, like, you can sign to my record and I'll pay for all your lawyer's fees and I'll pay so your mom can keep her house and I'll do all this stuff. So he would find these like down on their luck rappers and kind of swoop them up with money. Yeah. Now I'm going to say allegedly because I don't want to be killed, but God, this guy is scary.
Suge Knight. I did not think he was scary until I started reading about the guy.
Oh my God. I knew he was like in jail currently for manslaughter, which of course we'll get into a little later, but God, he's a scary guy. So, back on in, you know, in the '90s, there is a photo at 10:55 PM taken of Tupac and Suge together in a car on the way to Suge's quote dance club, followed by their entourage and their bodyguards. And apparently they usually both carried weapons, but nobody in that whole caravan, including the bodyguards, was armed that
night. Almost like a they JFK were thing, earlier. You know?
It's what?
It's like JFK. It was like the perfect storm to kind of do a form of killing.
Yeah. Yeah, this is definitely a perfect storm, but I kind of might have an explanation for the weapons, because we learn later that they were in a big scuffle, which we will get into more, but I'm wondering if they were afraid that the cops were going to be looking after them, so they didn't want to be carrying.
Yeah, that makes sense. I mean, and his entourage looks pretty big, you know, it's, yeah, and they're bodyguards, right?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. And this is like a caravan of entourage. And, you know, we do learn that at 11:10, Tupac and Suge pull up at an intersection and they see two girls and they're like, hey, babe, you know, how's it going? And a white Cadillac pulls up next to them on the passenger side and just starts opening fire. So Tupac tries to climb in the back seat, but he didn't make it. The attackers speed off. Suge, who's driving, speeds off in the opposite direction and he stops 1 mile away. Tupac was shot in the hip, the chest, and the hand, and Suge had a graze to his temple. Nobody is going to say anything. Nobody is willing to say that they are a witness except for one guy who is childhood friend of Tupac, 19-year-old Yafu Fula. He's one of, they call him a backup singer. He's not really a backup singer. He's just featured on Tupac's tracks. Mm-hmm. But he was riding in the car directly behind Tupac, and he told police that he could identify the killers in a photo lineup. So Tupac is in the hospital in a medically induced coma for 6 days, but he does eventually die on September 13th of 1996. And Unsolved Mysteries gives us three stories to think about. So the first theory is gang violence. Now, I'm sure pretty much everybody knows out there that the Bloods and the Crips have a huge rivalry. It actually dates back to the 1970s. There is surveillance footage from the MGM Grand Casino 3 hours before Tupac was shot. And this is actually where the Tyson fight was earlier. And we see a bunch of like Tupac and Suge's entourage getting into this huge melee brawl, yeah, craziness in the lobby.
Can I also mention something? Now, We see surveillance footage today. You know, sometimes you'll say somebody went into a 7-Eleven and robbed it, and they'll go, "Do you know this man?" And it's like, it looks terrible. Like it looks like, mm-hmm, it was from the '80s. Like this footage, mm-hmm, from the MGM Grand is amazing. This is,
yeah,
right. I mean, and we're talking 24 years ago. And we're saying that the camera in 7-Eleven, you know, in my town, can't capture somebody that's only 5 feet away. It's amazing.
I know,
to
and
me.
You could seriously see like the clothing that they were wearing. Like you could tell these guys were wearing like silk suits and stuff. Yeah. And like it was great footage.
It wasn't, but I'm kind of blown away by the fact that, you know, there's really cheap surveillance footage and then there's Vegas surveillance footage, which, of course,
yeah,
I can only imagine how amazing the quality is now.
I know, right?
Which, of course, not to go down the whole thing, but we have the footage here that we saw with Tupac was, you know, some footage. And then we saw from that shooting that happened in October a couple years ago, and the footage is worse. Mm-hmm. So mm-hmm, it's kind of a questionable thing. I don't want to go down that rabbit hole. I'm just saying it's kind of weird to me that that happened 20 years later and the footage is worse than 1996's footage.
Yeah, no, it's bizarre. But apparently the reason that the whole scuffle started was that somebody in the entourage of Tupac and Suge, they saw 22-year-old Orlando Baby Lane Anderson. And he is an alleged gang member from the Southside Compton Crips. And the person in the entourage said that Baby Lane is the guy who tried to rob the entourage guy of a Death Row Records chain that he was wearing a few days earlier. Mm-hmm. So we get to see more surveillance footage of Tupac and Suge like hurrying out of this casino. They're like, not today. I am not getting arrested for this. Right. So they run out. Baby Lane is actually named a primary suspect in an affidavit by Detective Tim Brennan of the Compton Police Department. And Robert Stack comes on to tell us that it has long been rumored that Suge Knight is affiliated with the Compton Bloods. So there's a Crips Bloods thing going on. Now, Baby Lane filed a lawsuit against Death Row Records for the fight because what would you say that fight was? Like 15 guys on one? It was crazy.
Yeah, it was. But it was like also a thing that only lasted, you know, what, a minute, not even a minute.
Yeah, exactly. Well, he would have been dead for sure. Mm-hmm. It's just crazy. So he files a lawsuit, and in response, Tupac's mom files a wrongful death lawsuit against Baby Lane. And now apparently the lawsuits kind of cancel each other out, but it left Baby Lane's estate with $73,000 in winnings. Now, Baby Lane was very soon after, in May of 1998, he was actually killed in an unrelated gang shooting. And because of this brutal fight, Suge Knight actually spent almost 5 years in prison over this. So very interesting. Now, my favorite theory, because it's so interesting, is the East Coast, West Coast battle. And this is what I had always heard was the cause of his death, like definitively. Okay, so we have basically two main players here. We have the West Coast people, which is Suge and Tupac, who are with Death Row Records. And we have the East Coast people, Biggie and Diddy, aka Bad Boy Records. And Diddy, of course, at the time was like Puff Daddy. So when Tupac was shot back in 1994, he thought that Biggie and Diddy knew it was going to happen and chose not to warn him. Now, immediately after Tupac was shot, Diddy released a Biggie single called Who Shot Ya? So he's kind of, Tupac thought he was taunting him with this. Now, in a music video called Two of America's Most Wanted, which featured Snoop Dogg, Tupac publicly accuses Biggie and Diddy of setting him up. And so it's like this dramatized Scarface knockoff kind of thing. And he's like, hey, Pig, hey, Buffy. So which obviously is like a play on words of Big and Puffy. But like, you shot me. And they're like, no, man, we didn't do anything. And then in the video, Tupac's guys shoot and kill Puff and Biggie.
Yeah, I don't know how you're keeping those two separated.
I'm not doing a great job.
No,
of it,
you are.
But in that Hit 'Em Up, he is 100% clowning Biggie and Diddy by name. Like, it's crazy. And Fula is in the Yafu Fula is in the video too. If you want to look at it on YouTube, he starts at about 2 minutes and 35 seconds. But weeks before he was shot in Vegas, he went on a radio station KMEL to talk to DJ Sway. And he was talking about how he knows that Biggie's guys shot him and how he is like just destroying Biggie and Diddy. So he is not afraid to go on and name names of these guys. So March 9th, 1997, Biggie was shot to death leaving a party in Los Angeles. Now, in 2011, former Biggie Smalls death investigator Greg Kading wrote a book which alleged that Diddy commissioned Baby Lane's uncle, aka Dwayne Keith D. Davis, to kill Tupac and Suge that night for $1 million, and that Baby Lane was in the Cadillac with him at the time of the shooting.
Whew. Yeah, so that, it's a crazy. All of these theories are really crazy, but there's no solid evidence to really point to any single one of them. The videos and everything, it's fun, but I don't know how much I believe it all.
And, you know, we're just putting this out there. I'm definitely not publicly accusing anybody of murder. Yeah. But, yeah, we're just putting it out there for you guys to digest. Now, the third theory, which is kind of bonkers, is that Suge set him up. And while I don't put murder past Suge Knight, I don't think that he would intentionally put himself in the path of the bullet's trajectories. Like, that just seems like a close call. But on Unsolved Mysteries, they're like, how did the gunman know where Tupac would be? How come the gunman didn't try and kill Suge? Why didn't anybody have weapons that night?
Now, I don't think it would be that difficult, personally, to see, hey, I see him. He's staying at this hotel. He's in the casino. Let's keep following him. He's in this car. We're following him, following him, following him. And that's it. I mean, it doesn't seem to me to be that difficult to kind of track somebody.
And not for nothing, these guys were not laying low. They had their windows rolled down. They had their whole entourage with them. They're blaring the music. Like, they're a pretty big target.
Right, and they're in rock star mode. Somebody. You know, it's like they want everyone to know, this is where I am. Mm-hmm. This is who I am. And, you know, and it really is kind of a glitzy lifestyle that they're leading. And I don't know. I mean, I don't think it was a random thing. I don't buy into that for 1 second.
Me neither.
But I don't think that Suge Knight would put himself in the line of fire.
I don't think so either. But, you know, we have to discuss. He is a super, allegedly, dangerous guy. He once supposedly hung Vanilla Ice off the side of his hotel balcony by his ankles in order for Vanilla Ice to sign over the rights of Ice Ice Baby to Death Row Records. Yeah. That's a crazy story.
A famous
but
story,
also, yeah, former Death Row Records star Snoop Dogg has publicly accused Suge of having Tupac killed. Now, Detective Russell Poole kind of postulates that he thinks that Tupac was getting ready to leave Death Row Records and that Suge, who was having serious money problems at the time, had him killed to prevent that from happening. It is also widely thought that Suge orchestrated Biggie's killing as revenge for Tupac's killing. So we come up to 2015. On January 29th, Suge Knight crashed his car into two men, killing his friend Terry Carter, and that all took place in Compton, and he then fled the scene. Witnesses claim that he followed the men to a burger stand parking lot after an argument on the set of that film Straight Outta Compton, and the collision looked intentional. Now, I have seen the security footage, and I definitely think it looks intentional. Yeah. Like, that is a messed up video. If you guys want to see a snuff film, it is on YouTube.
Wow. You know, that movie Straight Outta Compton, which I've never seen.
Me neither.
You know, Compton's a tough area. Have you ever driven through Compton?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Oh, I've been out there. Yeah, I've been there.
No, and it's one of those things where, you know, I was out there and I rented a car. And I did not look at where the car rental place was. And it was in the middle of Compton. And I'm like, you know, palm trees. You know, how bad can it be? And it's a tough area. And
yeah.
It was not that bad picking it up because I got to drive away very quickly, but returning it was a very, very interesting situation. It's just, it's a tough area. And when you're driving down the street, everyone is kind of watching you if you're not a local. It's really just interesting.
For sure.
Yeah. So I've never seen Straight Out of Compton. I think I would find it interesting, but maybe a little scary. I'm not really sure.
Oh, for sure. And because of that whole scuffle, Suge is actually currently in prison. He is eligible for parole in 2037.
Oh, wow.
So just a few years after our noble brother guy who's in jail now. But where it gets kind of interesting, too, is that within a week of the shooting, Yafu Fula, the guy who was willing to like look at the guys through a police lineup, he returned to New Jersey. And he had asked the police to be quiet about his cooperation because he kind of viewed it maybe as snitching. But it was leaked to the press anyway. Now, 2 months after Tupac's killing, Fula was gunned down in an apartment complex and he was killed. And 2 weeks before the air date of this Unsolved Mystery, so in March of 97, two other members of the entourage claim that they told police that they saw something from the very beginning and that the police refused to give them a photo lineup.
Wow.
So we kind of end Unsolved Mystery saying that in Tupac's final music video, which is called I Ain't Mad At Ya, it premiered 3 days after his death. He filmed himself getting shot and killed, which is like very spooky and premonition-y, but he was killed by an unknown assailant. Now, my wordplay on Robert Stack did not end with the Stack effect, but in California Love, they actually say, "We untouchable like Elliot Ness." That's one of the lyrics. And guess who played Elliot Ness in The Untouchables? Robert Stack.
Bobby Stack.
Mm-hmm, exactly. So, you know, I mean, it's one of those things where everybody has conspiracies, but you brought up kind of a fun conspiracy.
Well, this is what I think happened. I don't think Tupac's dead. That's why nobody's gone to prison for his death.
Really?
Yeah, that's what I think. No, I was talking to my friend Will the other day. No, I was not. So it seems as though there's a conspiracy that Tupac lives. This is a very interesting conspiracy because if you were to go right now to Google and click the little news section and just type Tupac, you will find articles probably within the past several weeks where people are saying that they believe Tupac is alive in New Mexico. They think Tupac is, you know, people are calling out to him to, you know, step forward because they know he's alive. Suge Knight's son suggests that Tupac is alive. And, you know, it's one of these things that they aren't letting go. This is something that was a phenomenon that happened with Kurt Cobain, and it went away. Yeah. You know, it really kind of vanished.
And Elvis.
That took a while to go away, but I think he aged out. Mm-hmm. But there are people who, you know, Andy Kaufman is another person who people didn't believe that he died. It just, it's really, really out there. It's an interesting conspiracy theory. I'm just not really sure if Tupac had the reach to pull off something like this correctly, or had a reason to. If he was involved in something really dark and it came out afterward, then I could say, all right, maybe he went underground. But I don't know. I don't buy it.
I just don't see subtlety as his strong point. I don't think he's the kind to lay low. Like, he is straight up on that interview with Sway and in a lot of these music videos, like, come get me. Like, there's a lyric in Hit 'Em Up where he's like, you shot me, but your punks didn't finish, and like all this kind of stuff. It's like, oh my God. He was not afraid to like tell the haters what's up. So I just don't think that he would lay low.
Well, and also Willow Smith, who is Will Smith and Jada Pinkett Smith's child. Is Willow a boy or girl? I don't know.
A girl.
All right. I know that there's two kids. I don't really follow the Smiths very closely. But they wrote a story. This is several years ago, though. This is about 8 years ago, saying, dear Tupac, I know you're alive someplace. I think that my mommy misses you. Can you come back so mommy and me can be happy? I wish you were here. I really do love Willow. Now, what a weird thing to write publicly.
Yeah. They're weirdos, though.
What?
The kids, the Smith kids are kind of weird. Like, they do their own math. Like, the Smiths are very low-key Scientologists, from what I understand. Mm-hmm. And, like, the kids, if you go through, like, Jaden, the boy's Twitter, it's like, what am I reading? It is, like, the most meta out there crazy stuff.
Yeah, it's a lot for, like, you know, I have more resources than you can imagine, and what I'm going to do is basically talk about anything I want randomly. And it seems seems a little bit like Joaquin Phoenix, a little bit like, you know, really out there, like, what's he doing, you know, but trying to create this persona when really nobody cares. So that's just, you know, I don't care. I'm sorry. I don't want to speak for you.
No, I don't either.
But
I don't either.
I just think Will Smith could do another, you know, Men in Black. I don't know, that's all I want. Or another Fresh Prince of Bel-Air or Fresh Prince album or something. No, but I always like Will Smith. He's one of those people. I think he's a pretty decent actor. I don't know much about him, to be honest with you, but he was pretty good in iRobot, I guess. So
yeah.
But yeah, I mean, these theories are out there. That you'll find conspiracies for almost anything. So that's also fun. Mm-hmm. You know, Robin Williams, you can find conspiracies. There's all types of really cool stuff out there. If you're really bored and you want to read some really interesting stuff.
Totally.
Yeah. But Tupac, very modern to have this type of topic on Unsolved Mysteries. It makes it feel a little bit newer.
And it's just like 6 months after he died.
Yeah,
like,
it's really
pretty
relevant.
Crazy. Yeah.
It's like, we need ratings. Let's pull this together quick. But it's weird to hear Robert Stack talk about hip hop. Gangster rap.
Tonight we have been confronted with an entire catalog of unexplained and unsolved events. Tune in next time as Unsolved Mysteries Rewind discusses another collection of unsolved mysteries. Until then, we can only look and wonder.